Welcome to At Sixes and Sevens. I'm Margaret Rappaport, and today I'm going to be talking to Steve Bornemeyer because he's a person who's well aware that living a long life is a strong likelihood. Right now, today, in the United States, Steve, 20% of people over 60 are still working, but 80% are not. They're doing something else. And there are 23 million women, 60 and above, and 18 million men, 60 and above. I'm talking to you about how to live this 20-year period because there's never been such a large number of people living in these years. And you're a person who has some secret ways of living these years well. Welcome to you.
Well, thank you, Margaret. It's a pleasure and an honor to discuss these things with you. And I might just say, it seems to me the challenge is, at least from my perspective, in selecting which of the abundant opportunities there are for those who have a little time on their hands. Life is, or can be, rich, especially in this modern age when there are so many, well, technological advantages as well as cultural and as you pointed out, even economic advantages, opportunities, and maybe even necessities.
What do you do with your time, Steve? You're not in the labor force anymore. What do you do otherwise?
Well, you told me you were going to ask that question, and I remember a friend of mine, a little bit older than me, when he was going to retire, or as he called it. I don't use the word retire personally. And he said, what am I going to do? And I said, oh, my gosh, that is what a blessing when you have the opportunity to do a lot of things. So, yes, I have a lot of curiosity. I think that's part of living a vital, active life, whatever age one is. At a certain age, there are more opportunities to pursue those ideas that come up, however they come into your consideration. So whether it's culture, or whether it's environmental, or whether it's economic, I might say that I am not formally in the labor force, but yes, I am in a number of ways, and I have been as a so-called retiree, done consulting, and there are some opportunities I'm still pursuing on those areas that are in the mainstream of what my interests are. So I'm very open to those kinds of opportunities.
So besides having this secret of curiosity as a tool, you also have a secret of picking and choosing among the activities that you'll be engaged with.
Well, it's true. I guess one could be selective. Seems to me that once one is oriented towards appreciating the opportunities, it's almost the other thing that you have to be worried you'll be over avalanched with opportunities. And in fact, some days I feel that way. And it's hard to say no when you have something interesting to do. And so as I said before, what a fortuitous time for having these opportunities before us. Mm-hmm. And that can be everything from sports to gardening to hobbies to community activities to, I ran into a friend of mine yesterday who's hadn't seen him, springtime. He was out and about walking downtown, and he was telling me about his really active letter writing campaign to papers, to government officials. Mm-hmm. Very opinionated, but very engaged, and I remember why I had always seen him. He always would have a newspaper and would be sitting outside on a park bench that I happened to go by, and I don't know him otherwise. We've just talked about public affairs, and he's a busy man with his letter writing.
Well, one of the purposes of At Sixes and Sevens, why we're interviewing people in this age range, one of the wonderful things at this age is the time to connect. And all of us connecting in our different ways, coming from a multitude of professional and work experiences, and then connecting around civic activities or cultural activities. It's an absolutely astoundingly happiness producing.
Well, I think you're right. And when one is younger, one gets not trapped so much, but focused on one's life, whether it's children or family or working. But what a rich time to explore these opportunities the one's got.
Well, can you share with me an example of some of your activities? One, two?
Frankly, just to go back and link up this earlier story I was telling, I've often thought, and I believe really, that there is a vast interconnectedness of things and people. One of the benefits of appreciating this when you have a little more, maybe it's experience, maybe a little more perspective, is maybe it's just the joy of nodding to people on the street or in the store, which one has to learn. I'm not so sure that's natural or ingrained. One can have one dialogue on the street or the store or the phone or the home or the friendship lead to another, and pretty soon you're connected in talking about movies or art or music. And by the way, just to mention two things that I do and been great joys for me. I have a good friend. We teach courses in the Great American Songbook, and we've taught course one, we've taught course two, we're teaching a third version this fall in Broadway and film musicals, and that's not only been fun to do, terrific music, but I think I can say objectively the audiences that we've taught to have been extremely enthusiastic too, and it's the sort of thing that really draws one together. So that's one kind of connectedness. The other thing I do, which you and I have talked about, I teach a course with my son, which is a terrific blessing. Imagine having that kind of simpatico relationship.
I can.
I know you have your children.
I do some things with my children as well, both of them.
But we've been doing this course, and it's called Novels and Ideas, for 4 or 5 years. We have a nice flock of return attendees. We've read dozens and dozens and dozens of books and had great Socratic discussions. It's not so much teaching as questioning and getting terrific answers and thoughtful perspectives back from our, what we like to think of really as co-explorers, not students or classmates. So those are the sorts of things that one can move into, and of course that's just one little segment of it all.
So in response to my question, what will they do? They will redefine family.
Certainly, that's one thing. And they will have opportunities to explore these interests they have. I believe probably a great number of those in retirement, so to speak, I put quotes around that, have specialties that they could lead courses in and probably could develop followings like we have. And whether it's travelogues or photography or computer tricks. Who knows? But that's the sort of thing one can do, just to mention one area.
There is a huge redefinition going on as this, as we are in this 20-year period, but as the next group comes in, redefining family, how people relate to one another is going to happen, I'm sure. Redefining work and retirement, which is your point in several different ways. Redefining probably what success is all about, extending the notion of success from early in life at school, middle life when you're raising children or, you know, becoming famous and successful. But then success just extends itself into this 20-year period, and you're in fact saying what that success is.
Well, of course, that changes as one goes through life, and really the theme maybe is how to live in the moment with the wisdom that everyone picks up, or maybe we should call it the experience everyone picks up through a lifetime of learning, and then the forward perspective to imagine, this is part of it too, to imagine what possibilities lie before.
I'm Margaret Rappaport at Sixes and Sevens, talking to Steve Bornemeyer about the vigorous, vibrant life after 60. We're going to take a break now, and we'll be back. Welcome back to At Sixes and Sevens. I'm Margaret Rappaport, talking today with Steve Bornemeyer about the excitement that he has generated for himself in living in the sixes and the sevens. Steve, as we've been discussing, people in this age group certainly have the impulse to connect with one another by offering and sharing their experience, their life experience with one another, and appreciating the differences and the diversity of our separate experiences. And just as we were talking about what's happening as a result of this connection, the idea of people enriching each other's lives kept coming into my head. And this is a period where enrichment can be particularly satisfying, but I also think it's particularly necessary because the reinvention of life, the extending of life into these years is happening. For example, in the 20th century, life expectancy for people in the United States went from age 46 to age 76 in the 20th century. Now in the 21st century, we have a very large group of people, those born between 1946 and 1964, who are going to face a life expectancy that is at the moment nearing 90. And those are averages, so there are people who will live even longer. So enrichment during this 20-year period in the 60s and the 70s is essential. And I know that you recognize that in your own life. Can you talk about the enrichment in your life?
Well, thank you. I did want to expand a little bit on something you asked earlier and bring it back to this. When you talked about family, I was meant to say, and I mentioned my son, but it is an extended family. I am very fortunate to have health. My wife, my children are all healthy. Even my mother's still alive and healthy and sharp as a tack. So I do have that, what you might call, natural resource to draw on. Mm-hmm. And of course that extends to the connections, as I was saying earlier, of those family members and their friends and family. And what a great joy to be able to have that network behind one. But the enrichment part is sometimes a direct result of that too. You mentioned what do I do, and I mentioned a couple courses, but Of course, physical activity is important throughout one's life. And over the years, I have done quite a bit of sports, but also other kinds of physical activity. I run marathons with my kids and done exercise programs with my wife and with my kids. And that has helped generate a kind of enrichment in my life. But it's also, I think you and I have agreement on the playfulness or games that sometimes occur, so or can be developed or enjoyed. So I must say I do have a slight addiction. I do the Sunday Times crossword puzzle every Sunday with great joy, and I've over the years been able to recruit a couple family members to do them with me. It's not a competition, but we do check in to see who gets the theme the quickest, and so there's that sort of playfulness, I think is your term, that is part of it too.
That makes you an inspiration to a very large group of people.
Well, you know, Malcolm Gladwell said that to be expert in anything, you have to do 10,000 hours of focus. Yes, I've had a lifetime of doing the crossword puzzles, and that, looking back on it, probably way exceeds 10,000 hours. But that's just part of it. You and I were talking in the break. Also requires the fortuitous mentorship or someone to guide one through the rocky parts of starting up something that's a passionate experience, because no one's a natural at violin or tennis or crossword puzzles, and you need someone to encourage one, unless you have someone like your granddaughter who's a natural from the get-go. But even that requires some nurturing.
Right, right, it does. The concept of this age group being a resource for society is where what you just said is taking me. I'm very well aware that people have the time, they have the life experience in their 60s and in their 70s to really be a counterbalance to all of the difficulties in American society. And very few people are talking about that resource and mobilizing that resource, and at Sixes and Sevens intends to do that. However we, in this 20-year period, can inspire the society, however we can bring new ideas to it, that's, I think, going to be a tremendous contribution.
I couldn't agree more, and I have had this terrific experience the last year or two or three as I've been involved in the Orleans Community Partnership, and it's given me the opportunity to talk to scores and scores and scores of people over a cup of coffee just to explore what their thoughts are about community development. And I can say without exception that I come away from each of those interviews, many I haven't known the other party before, with some new idea and some new inspiration. And so in a way, to your comment about what I'll call mentoring, I think all of us need to recognize we can mentor anybody, and we should all take it on as a responsibility to bring someone on board, whether you're interested in wooden boat building or photography or butterflies, and see if you can't spread that joy with a new partner.
Mm-hmm. And create new social networks for the improvement of society, which would be just an ideal situation. This next group of people coming into the 60s and 70s have a track record of success in defining, inventing society anew. You recall that these people came through the 60s and 70s and changed gender relations, for want of a better word. They came through the 80s and 90s and changed the definition of success. Suddenly, how well you do in family life is just as important as how well you do at work, and so on. And I am fascinated by the way in which we will connect with one another, the way we'll enrich one another, inspire one another, exactly as is happening in the Orleans Community Partnership. Steve, I've not experienced in my life the sense of a new community forming quite so quickly and quite so attractively and easily before in my life.
Well, thank you. That's a very kind tribute. I will say that one of the conditions we're operating in that sometimes is a source of a joke or concern, sometimes great concern, is the age, called the aging demographic. In fact, the town you and I both live in has got one of the oldest average populations in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. But that's not a cause for alarm in my view. It is for some, and some say this is the biggest challenge coming down the pike. Oh no, I think this is the bonanza of sophisticated experience and world traveling insights. And as we go forward and share those, we can have an even richer bounty of experiences and opportunities.
I absolutely agree with you. It's why I use vibrancy as a word so often. I mean, it's one thing to live in a society that has good health care, good nutrition, knowledge among people as to how to promote longevity. But longevity by itself, it is vigor, but it's not vibrancy. It's the connections that we're making with one another and the way we're implementing some of these new ideas that's going to just be the right combination.
I agree, and I'm not sure that I'm anything more than just a humble layman, but many of the studies I've read, like most of my information, it comes from casual study in newspapers and magazines, but the measure of health or vigor, as you called it, by life endurance is one way to look at it. But it seems to me, if we're not measuring what you call vibrancy, what's the point? Living hollow lives is of no value compared to living vibrant lives.
Steve, I thank you. I thank you for a wonderful chat. And this is Margaret Rappaport at Sixes and Sevens, very happily at Sixes and Sevens. Steve, I think we can safely agree that the graying of America is upon us. There are 44 million people over 60 in the United States today, and that group of people will double in size in the next few years. And besides vibrancy and vigor that seems to be in this age group, there's a sense I have that life can be savored during this period, that an enthusiasm for life can be developing. And how would you encourage people to pursue an enthusiasm for life, growing as you age, as opposed to just aging?
That's a very provocative question in a way, because you opened a few doors that I can respond to very quickly, I think, about that process. If you forgive me, I'll use the first person. I was very lucky in one of my second careers, had a few, when I worked with the international organization Save the Children and got quite a dose of what you might call the realities of poverty remediation programs around the world. But the other benefit of that, aside from opening my eyes, was the true honor of working with some true altruistic humanitarians. And I know it's been studied over and over again, the benefits of what might be called empathy or altruism. And I think that is part of the healthy last third of one's life, too, to make sure one's oriented when one can to appreciating and sharing and working with those who might need a little extra hand with their lives or their prospects or their violin playing or their crossword puzzle doing, whatever it might be.
Right. It's a wonderful time of life to take the time and to enjoy the time. And the concept of wisdom, being an elder wisely. The term sage is not one that's used very often in our culture. It's such a youth-oriented culture that people don't look forward to this time of life unless we talk about what's possible during this time of life. And the thought of, since I've been involved in scholarship all my life, the thought of going from scholar to sage is quite an experience for me. That is a wonderful sense of enthusiasm and excitement. And altruism is a source of enthusiasm and excitement for you. we are fortunate people to be able to live long enough to reach that, what I consider, pinnacle of living. Doesn't mean that we don't still have all of the practical activities of life, but I find for myself a freedom to focus on developing wisdom, having dialogues, enjoying people in a way that there just was no time to do before.
Well, yes, let me compliment you on that. I think what I'll call openness, because that is a ticket to the vital, vibrant, active life too. And it's something else you mentioned, you called it dialogue, and the experience that one can engender in the sixes and sevens and eights and nines is to practice dialogue. And that requires good listening, openness, especially in dialogue where there are very different opinions. It's really a trick, but how wonderful when one can get into an exchange of ideas with someone, in a way, ideally, who has a different opinion. When those hard shells get cracked and you're mixing the scrambled eggs, it's it's really quite exhilarating. And but that takes, as I was trying to recognize in you, in your scholarship and in your public career, openness and sharing.
Yes, yes, very, very important. And I have always known that it's important, but I consider now that it's more important. I'm at a stage of life where it's just essential for keeping the vibrancy to life. And I am sitting here today at Sixes and Sevens talking to this wide audience of people who are in that age group. And it's very exciting. It's very, very exciting. You've been listening to At Sixes and Sevens. I'm Margaret Rappaport, and I've been talking with Steve Bornemeyer. We have had an interesting dialogue together. I hope that you connected with it. I hope that you've been enriched by it. And dare I say, I hope that there's been a certain amount of inspiration. Do you want to deliver a message to our audience, Steve?
First of all, thank you for the opportunity to share ideas, explore them together, and open up some pockets of thought that one doesn't, or I don't keep at the forefront. But I suppose in closing, I would just recommend, or hope I would practice, openness and joy in the pursuit of dialogue.
Thank you very much.
You're
for
welcome.
Today. And this is Margaret Rappaport at Sixes and Sevens.